Hello friends, now we are going to look into Chapter 7 of the Negotiable Instruments Act, which deals with classification of the instruments. See, we have so far seen what is a negotiable instrument, what is a promissory note, what is a bill of exchange, what is a check, what are the types of these instruments, and who are the parties involved in these instruments, and how they really do function. Now we are going to look deeply into each aspect of these instruments. Okay, so today we are going to deal with the classification of the instruments. We can say more or less the types of instruments, how they appear, how they really come into picture. The first type of instrument is the bearer instrument. This is the most basic type of a negotiable instrument. A negotiable instrument, we have seen, can be a promissory note, a bill of exchange, or a check. Now, these are all instruments which are unconditional orders in writing drawn on somebody asking him to pay to somebody else. In the case of a promissory note, it is drawn by the maker and he promises to pay to someone. But in the check and a bill of exchange, the maker is asking the drawee to pay to the payee. Now here, in the case of a bearer instrument, it is an instrument which it is specifically written on that instrument, pay to the bearer. It is mentioned, Mr. A, please pay to Mr. B. But he may say, Mr. A, please pay to the bearer of this instrument. So, the one who is holding the instrument will get the payment. So, the bearer is the person who is holding the instrument. So, he may not write, that is the maker, the drawer of the bill, may not write specifically pay to Mr. B or Mr. C. He may mention pay to the bearer. Or he may write Mr. A, please pay to Mr. B or the bearer. So, here when it is specifically mentioned pay to bearer, it becomes a bearer instrument. So, an instrument is payable to bearer when it is specifically expressed to be so payable means payable to a bearer. Any person who gets a lawful possession of the instrument is entitled to its payment. See, here the word lawful possession is very important. When we say it is a bearer instrument, obviously, it means the one who is holding it, the one in whose possession that instrument is, he becomes entitled for the payment. But you have to remember one thing, it cannot be a robber, it cannot be a thief who has taken possession of the instrument. I steal it from somebody, I am holding it, I am the bearer of the instrument, but I am not having lawful possession. What I am having is an illegal, unlawful possession. I am not entitled to the payment. So, a bearer instrument has to transfer the rights, payment rights from one person to another. In the case of a theft, a stolen check or a stolen bill, the holder does not get lawful possession. That is why he is not entitled to the payment. Whether it is a bearer instrument or any other instrument, he is not entitled to the payment if it is a stolen check. That is why any person who gets a lawful possession of the instrument is entitled to the payment. So, it has to be a lawful possession. It cannot be an unlawful possession. A bearer instrument is transferable merely by delivery. I want somebody to go and take the payment. I just hand over the instrument. I need not even endorse anything on the backside of the instrument. That please pay to Mr. C, please pay to Mr. X. I just hand over the instrument and tell him please go and get the payment. So, there is no need for any endorsement. Only delivery is sufficient. Even if there are endorsements, the bearer characteristic is not lost. Suppose I do endorse on the backside. I have a bearer instrument in my favor and I endorse on the backside, please pay to Mr. Sohanlal. But instead of Sohanlal, if Mr. Mohanlal goes and takes the instrument, He is entitled to the payment, provided he has not stolen it from Sohanlal. Sohanlal gives it to Mohanlal, jao, paise leke aao. So he will go and get the payment. He may be acting as an agent, he may be acting as a representative, he may be a servant. He goes and gets the payment on behalf of the main person. But here Mr. Sohanlal does not have to endorse it in favor of Mr. Mohanlal. Even if he endorses, it has no value, the endorsement has no meaning or any implication. Because it is a bearer instrument, the person who has to make the payment will make the payment to the bearer. All that he has to ensure is that the person who has come to take the payment does not behave suspiciously, does not behave like a thief, or he does not have any other features which gives doubt into the mind of the drawee. Then in that case he can make the payment to the bearer, because the instrument says pay to the bearer. So making payment to the bearer is very much justified. And even if there are endorsements on the back, the endorsement will not have any superseding effect on the word bearer. A bearer remains a bearer, and that is why we always say once a bearer, always a bearer. A bearer instrument entitles the holder of the instrument to go and get the payment. So there is no question of any endorsements or endorsements being irregular. There is no problem. You don't have to verify the endorsements. You don't have to go into those details. All you have to do is to make the payment to the bearer, provided of course he is, as I said, okay otherwise. For instance, if there is an instrument where the amount involved is 5 lakhs, 10 lakhs, and if a small child of 10 year old goes to get the payment, because he is the bearer, we will not make the payment to such a small child of such a huge amount. There the doubt will come into the mind. How can such a small child take the payment? So there we have to exercise those due precautions. So there should not be any negligence on the part of the paying person to get any doubt about this aspect. So that much preliminary precaution the payer has to take, and otherwise he can make the payment to the bearer irrespective of his status or position. Even if his name does not appear on the instrument, as a payee, as an endorsee, money can be paid to the bearer. The next type of instrument is an order instrument. An order instrument, a negotiable instrument which is payable to the order when it is expressed to be payable specifically to the order of a person, the order of a specified person, or a specified person or his order, or a specified person without mentioning or to his order. So there are three cases of an order instrument. You make payable to a specified person, you make it payable to the order of a specified person, or you make it payable to the specified person or his order. Just let me repeat once again. The order instrument is one which is payable to a specified person. Nothing more is written after that. To Mr. C, to Mr. X. Secondly, pay to the order of Mr. C or Mr. X, or pay to Mr. C or his order. It is interchanging of the words C and order, Mr. C, order, order, Mr. C, or you just write Mr. C. In three above, where only the name is mentioned, please pay to Mr. C. Nothing else is written after that. It doesn't mean that Mr. C cannot endorse it further. He can endorse it further to somebody, and the instrument is payable to that somebody now, the endorsee. So in three above also, transfer of the liability is possible. That is, further endorsements can be made. We can make further endorsements. We can have any number of endorsements thereafter. It is not restrictive. So although the bill mentions, please pay to Mr. C, and nothing else is written after that, even then Mr. C can endorse it in favor of D or E or F, and those endorsements will be valid. Or it is written, please pay to Mr. C or his order. His order means to whom he instructs. he mentions that I order that I give this amount to Mr. D, Mr. X, Mr. Y. That is the word order. Order means whatever instruction he gives. Or I say, please pay to the order of Mr. C. So when I say please pay to the order of Mr. C, it doesn't mean that Mr. C should get the payment. I am saying that Mr. C should direct to whom the payment should go to. So please pay to the order of Mr. C means what is the instruction given by C, ask for that instruction and then pay accordingly. It may or may not mean that Mr. C may say, okay, pay to me itself. Or Mr. C may say, no, please pay to Mr. X. So please pay to the order of Mr. C means get the instructions from Mr. C and make the payment accordingly. So the difference between please pay to Mr. C, please pay to the order of Mr. C is that in one case I am being very specific, I am saying please pay to Mr. C. I am clear when I am making the instrument, I am the drawer of the instrument, I say please pay to Mr. C. In the other case, I am saying please pay to the order of Mr. C. Here I am not saying make the payment to C, I am saying ask for the instruction of C and make the payment accordingly. Mr. C may say pay to Mr. M or Mr. O or Mr. P or Mr. X, please pay accordingly. In the third case, I am saying please pay to Mr. C or his order. So I am giving an option. Either you pay to C or you pay to his order. So these are three different situations. All are order instruments. In all the three cases, Mr. C can endorse and transfer the liability. So the payment can be made either to one person or his order or his endorsees. There is no restriction. The instrument is an order instrument when these words are mentioned on the instrument. Inland bill. Normally we would think that inland bill means any bill drawn in India and payable in India. But the definition of Negotiable Instrument Act, in the definition, in Negotiable Instrument Act, an inland bill is not defined in this manner. As per Section 11 of this Negotiable Instrument Act, it says that an inland bill is one which is drawn in India, made payable in India, or drawn on a person who resides in India. See, you have to be very careful in reading the word OR or. It is a bill drawn in India, means the maker of the bill has to be in India. He has drawn the bill in India. He has drawn it on a person who resides in India or who is going to pay in India. See, it is a bill drawn in India. Okay, that much is clear. It is a bill drawn in India. So the maker is in India. On the person who resides in India or payable in India. So here, suppose the bill is drawn in India on a person who resides in India, but he need not pay it in India. He can go abroad and make the payment. He is from India, but he can go abroad and pay from there. Or the payment he may make in India, but he is abroad. He stays abroad. So all these possibilities are allowed in the Negotiable Instrument Act. It is an inland bill because it is drawn in India. But it may be on a person in India or it may be payable outside India or in India, whatever. A bill drawn in Mumbai and payable in Chennai on a person who stays in New York. This is an inland bill. Why it is an inland bill? Because in the definition where it says made payable in India or drawn on any person who resides in India, it does not say and, it says or. That is why this is allowed, where you say a bill drawn in Mumbai, payable in Chennai on a person who stays in New York or London. It is an inland bill. A bill drawn in Mumbai on a person in Chennai and payable in New York. He is not staying in New York, but he is going to pay it in New York. He stays in Chennai, but he is going to pay, make the payment in New York. This is also an inland bill. So, an inland bill is something which is drawn in India, made payable in India or on a person outside India, or it can be drawn in India, made on a person in India but payable outside India. All these options are available. They are all inland bills, and because see, suppose the payment comes in New York or in London, it will not be in rupees. So that is why the definition is totally silent about the currency of the bill. They don't say that inland bill has to be in Indian rupees. It is not mentioned anywhere in the definition. It only says that it is drawn in India, made payable in India or drawn on a person out in India. Now, all inland bills, the definition talks only about being drawn, it talks about the drawee, and it talks about the place where the payment has to take place. The total definition is silent altogether about endorsements. So that is why there is no bar on an inland bill which can be endorsed outside India. So I draw a bill on A. I am staying in India. I have drawn the bill in India. I draw it on Mr. A. Mr. A is in India. But he endorses it in favor of B. B is staying in London. B gets the bill. He endorses it in favor of C. C is staying in Tokyo. Now he is going to make the payment. C will make the payment in Tokyo. Or he will, if he is the payee, he will get the payment in Tokyo. So there is no confinement as to the currency. It is not that I have to make the payment. If I am the drawee, I have to make the payment. I need not pay it in Indian rupees because I have to make the payment in Tokyo or in London. I have to make the payment as per that currency. So there is no restriction about the currency. There is no restriction about the place of payment. There is no restriction about the person who is residing where. And there is no restriction about the endorsements. Endorsements can take place outside India. Endorsements can take place in many countries. But still it will remain an inland bill. The inland characteristic remains intact. That is not lost. It is an inland bill. It is drawn in India. It fulfills the definitions mentioned here in the Act. And the bill passes from hand to hand by endorsements. It can pass from hand to hand in various places outside India. And the payment is done as per the last endorsement. And that is still valid. And it remains an inland bill. Inland bills need not be protested on dishonor. It is optional. See, inland bill, protest comes into question only when there is a dishonor. Now, suppose the bill is payable in New York and it is not paid, it is dishonored in New York. If the law of New York says there is no need for a protest, you need not protest. But if the law in New York says you must do protest, you have to go for protest. So it depends on the place where it is going to be paid. And it depends on the law in that place. In that place, if they say, no, you have to do the protest, you have to go for it because it is dishonored in this country, law requires you have to go for protest, then you have to do it. So it is optional. You know, here sitting in India, we need not insist that you must do it. The definition, as I said, does not talk about the currency in which the bill is to be drawn. Hence, it is not necessary that the inland bill has to be in Indian rupees. So, let us get this very clear. Normal idea which we have fixed in our head is that inland bill drawn in India, payable in India, on a person in India, in Indian rupees. No, these are all not required as far as Negotiable Instrument Act is concerned. By and large, this is the definition we'll go by. This is the practice. But when it comes to definition, when it comes to theory or legal aspects, a bill can be in any currency, payable in any country, but it is drawn in India on a person in India or person residing abroad, but payable in India. So all these options are available, and this is how an inland bill is defined in the Act. Foreign bills. Now, what is a foreign bill? Normally, we would think that foreign bill means something which is drawn outside India on a person in India, or somebody in India drawing it on a person outside India. The definition doesn't talk about all these things. The Negotiable Instrument Act only says if the bill is not an inland bill, it is a foreign bill. Either it is an inland bill or it is a foreign bill. So the definition of inland bill is given in the Act, and anything which is away from the definition of an inland bill will become a foreign bill. So as per the definition, inland bill is something which is drawn in India on a person residing in India, or it is payable outside India. In the case of a foreign bill, any one of these things can be deviated and it becomes a foreign bill. Thus, any bill drawn in India on a person outside India and payable outside India, here I am using the word and. In the definition for inland bill, the word OR, or is mentioned. Here we say and. It is drawn in India on a person in India but payable outside India. Now this is a foreign bill, or a bill drawn outside India, drawn on a person in India, payable in India or outside India, this is also a foreign bill. Because here the very first portion of the definition, a bill drawn in India, that itself is deviated. We talk about a bill drawn abroad in a foreign country. So it is drawn outside India but drawn on a person in India, payable either in India or outside. This is a foreign bill. So as I said, any one aspect of a inland bill, if that is deviated, if that is flouted, it becomes a foreign bill. Foreign bills have to be protested. The foreign bill may be drawn in Indian currency because it is payable in India, but it has to be protested. Whether it is in Indian rupees or in foreign currency, whatever, a foreign bill by the very definition, foreign bills have to be protested. So foreign bills need to be protested if the law of the place where the bill is drawn or payable has such a law. If a foreign bill is payable in India, law requires that every foreign bill has to be protested. So we have to go for protest. If the foreign bill is payable in Tokyo or Singapore and those laws require that protest is necessary, you have to go for protest. So the Act says that foreign bills need to be protested if the law of the place where the bill is drawn or payable has such a law. If there is a law which makes provision of protest compulsory, it has to be done. So it goes as per the place where it is payable. Okay. Now we come to documentary bills. These are regular bills of exchange and they deal with trade. A person buys certain goods from another person and he has to make the payment. So the buyer buys, the seller sells. The seller is going to dispatch the goods from his place to the place of the buyer. They are in two different cities or two different states or two different countries. The buyer has purchased the goods. The seller has sold the goods. The buyer has to make payment to the seller. So a bill of exchange is drawn. That bill of exchange, when the seller sells the goods, he draws a bill of exchange and asks the buyer to make the payment to him or to his representative. And for showing that he has already sold the goods and he has dispatched them, he is going to enclose a transport document, a shipping document. If it is a foreign country and the goods are coming by ship, he will have the shipping document, a bill of lading. If it is coming by road, he will have a transport receipt, lorry receipt. If it is coming by railway, he will have a railway receipt, and there will be an invoice for the cost of the goods dispatched, and if it is being insured, there will be an insurance policy also. Most of the time, these documents along with the bill of exchange will go to the bank of the buyer. The documents are sent to the buyer's bank and the buyer's bank is told, please collect the payment from the buyer. He has to pay for the goods that are sold to him. Take the payment and then hand over these documents to him. So, the bank, the buyer's bank, in the place where the buyer is stationed, in that place the buyer's bank will take the documents. They will receive the documents by post. Once they receive the documents, they will see what is mentioned on the bill, whether payment is on demand or on acceptance, I mean the release of goods, release of documents. If the bill of exchange says that you collect the amount and then release the documents, he will take the payment from the buyer, hand over the documents and remit that money to the seller. But if the bill of exchange says that give him 90 days time, but make him accept the bill. So, the buyer has to come to the bank, his own bank, sign on the bill, accept it. Then the bank will hand over the documents, bill of lading, invoice and insurance policy to the buyer. The buyer will take those documents, go and get the goods from the shipping company or the lorry company, transport company, and payment will be made on the due date. So, normally documentary bills are those bills which are accompanied by shipping documents. Shipping documents is a common word including invoice, bill of lading, insurance policy, etc. etc. actually means, you know, there could be some 2-3 more documents. Like, you know, the buyer must have specified, if he is buying chemicals, he will say, I want only of this particular concentration or this much percentage dilute acid. So, whatever he has specified, somebody has to certify that yes, this particular chemical conforms to these specifications. So, there will be a certificate issued by some authority saying yes, these goods pertain to these specifications. So, that certificate may be one more document along with the shipping documents. The buyer may insist that I want ISI trademark. Then the seller, after he manufactures the goods, when he is going to ship it, he has to get the ISI certificate also and enclose that. So, these documents will come and the bill which is coming with these documents, that bill is known as a documentary bill. It is a documentary bill because along with the bill of exchange, there are so many documents attached to it. So, it becomes a documentary bill. Now, usually these bills are drawn in duplicate or triplicate. There will be 2-3 sets of these documents. So, that even if one set is lost, the other sets will act as proof or identification. There could be, you know, since there is a place difference, that place and this place, there is a city or country difference. So, the seller will have his representative in one place, in the place of the buyer, and he may send one set of documents to his representative, his agent, collecting agent. So, there, or even if it is coming through the bank will require one set of documents, the buyer will require one set of documents will be kept with the seller. So, there will be usually 3 sets of documents and we don't say, you know, duplicate or triplicate. They may be Xerox copies, whatever, but we don't call them Xerox copies, we don't call them duplicate, triplicate, we don't even call them copies, we just call them sets. So, the bill of exchange, you know, the shipping document, the invoice or the bill of lading or the lorry receipt, they could be Xerox copies or they could be 3 printouts. But the bill of exchange will have to be necessarily 3 different printouts. They are not Xerox copies. And on each one of them, it will be written first of exchange, second of exchange, third of exchange. Normally, the first of exchange will go to the buyer because they are treated as the original and they are sent to the buyer. The second set will be with the banker, the third set will be with the seller himself. If the seller is routing through his bank, that means one more bank has come into picture, that is the collecting bank, he is going to collect the payment from the buyer's bank. So there are two banks, buyer's bank and seller's bank. There are two people, buyer and seller. So there are four different organizations or setups, and so four sets of documents are required. So usually they will be in sets, duplicate, triplicate, and are negotiated through a bank. So there will be a bank usually involved in these transactions for documentary bills. They could be different countries also. They may be inland bills or foreign bills. The bank will collect the payment of the bill and then hand over the documents to the consignee. The consignee is the buyer. He is going to get the payment. He is going to get the, he is going to make the payment and he is going to get the goods. So he is the consignee who is going to receive the consignment. So, and documentary bills are very much in vogue in India and in foreign countries, and usually these are the documents which are involved in most of the trade transactions. Now we have what is known as ambiguous bill. I've told you a little about this earlier also, but let me make it very clear. Suppose a person draws a negotiable instrument. In a promissory note, very simple words, I promise to pay to Mr. B sum of rupees so much on so and so date. In the bill of exchange, I say, Mr. A, please pay to Mr. B rupees so much on or before so and so date. Now, when I draw, sometimes, you know, I may add a few words. In the promissory note, I say, Mr. B, I promise to pay you so much, or in case you don't do so and so thing, I will pay to your representative, Mr. C, Mr. B, Mr. X, and so on. Now, while writing these words, I do it in such a way that I jumble up the words here and there, and then, you know, the promissory note loses its original basic character, and then, you know, you are, by looking at it, you have a doubt. Is it really a promissory note or is it a bill of exchange? Because yahan pe do teen logon ka naam dikh raha hai. Normally in a promissory note only two people are involved, the maker and the promisee, the one who is going to get the payment, the payee. But wordings, you know, look as though there are three, four people involved. So you don't know whether this is a promissory note or a bill of exchange. A bill of exchange also, suppose I prepare a bill of exchange and I tell Mr. B, please pay to Mr. C. Or if I say that I am only Mr. B and I, Mr. B, will pay to Mr. C. Now here what has happened, the drawer and drawee are same. When I say I, Mr. B, will pay to Mr. C, that means I am promising to pay to C. So a bill of exchange can become a promissory note because only two people are involved, the drawer and drawee are same. Or I am telling Mr. B, please pay to me on so and so date. So the drawer and the payee are same people in a bill of exchange. So, you know, during those writing, you know, we jumble up the words and we write the bill in such a way that the person reading it is not able to make out whether this is a promissory note or a bill of exchange. Confusion aagya man mein. So where there is ambiguity, where there is doubt, is this a promissory note, is it a bill of exchange, what is this? When you have such a doubt, then that particular instrument is known as an ambiguous bill, where it is not very clear from the contents of the instrument whether it's a promissory note or a bill of exchange. So, in such a case, what do you do? How do you go by it? Is it a promissory note and I treat it as a promissory note, or is it a bill of exchange and I have to treat it as a bill of exchange? The doubt comes. Negotiable Instrument Act says that in the case of ambiguous bills, the person, the holder of the bill, he has a choice. He has a choice. By looking at it, he feels, no, this is more like a promissory note, I'll treat it as a promissory note. Or he says, no, this looks very much like a bill of exchange. Theek hai, wordings idhar udhar ho gaye hain, but still ye to bill of exchange hai, promissory note nahi hai. So I am going to treat it as a bill of exchange. So whatever decision he takes, he can make an option, he can make an exercise his option, he can choose a particular mode for the instrument, but once that option is made, he has to stick to it. He cannot say today, okay, I treat it as promissory note, and tomorrow he says, no, I am going to treat it as bill of exchange. ये बार बार बदल नहीं सकते हैं. एक बार उसने तय कर लिया कि दिस इज ओनली अ प्रोमिसरी नोट, आई एम गोइंग टू ट्रीट इट एज दैट, ही हैज टू ट्रीट इट एज प्रोमिसरी नोट देयर आफ्टर. देयर इज नो लुकिंग बैक, देयर इज नो सेकेंड ओपिनियन. वंस ही ट्रीट्स द बिल एज अ बिल ऑफ एक्सचेंज, इट विल रिमेन अ बिल ऑफ एक्सचेंज. देयर इज नो लुकिंग बैक फॉर दैट. सी, एन एम्बिग्यूस इंस्ट्रूमेंट इज वन वेयर द ड्रॉअर एंड ड्रॉई आर सेम. Where the drawer and drawee are same, what happens? See, in a bill of exchange, there are three parties minimum. In a promissory note, there are two parties minimum. In a bill of exchange, suppose the drawer and drawee are same, then what happens? The number of people minimum, instead of three, it becomes two. So, since there are two, in promissory note also there are two, there it's likely that it is getting merged into each other. Bill of exchange becomes a promissory note. The drawee is a fictitious person. So, in an ambiguous instrument, it is possible that the drawee is a fictitious person. That means that person doesn't exist. So, there is only a drawer and a payee. Then again, it becomes a promissory note or literally a promissory note. Or in the third case, the drawee is a person not capable of entering into a contract. So, if the drawee cannot enter into a contract, he goes out of the picture, then who remains? Only the drawer and the payee. So, again, it is just two people left, that means it becomes a promissory note, or you can retain the characteristic of a bill of exchange. Now, the choice is yours. Once you exercise the choice, you have to stick to it. The holder of the bill will decide whether to treat the bill as promissory note or as a bill of exchange. So, it is the holder's choice exclusive. Decide what you want, or ek baar decide kar liya, so please stick to it.